Everyone's experience is unique to them. This podcast contains the personal story, experience, and opinions of the speaker, rather than that of Breast Cancer Now. Hello and welcome to the Breast Cancer Now podcast. This is a series that shares the stories of people who have had breast cancer. It's also where you'll hear the voices of our nurses, researchers, and experts who help to provide support for today and hope for the future to anyone affected by breast cancer. Hello, I'm Em, and today I'll be speaking with Kendra. Kendra, a nurse and mother of three, was diagnosed with breast cancer last year after attending a routine screening trial. She encountered a number of difficulties during treatment, one of which being the stigma that still surrounds breast cancer for some people. Kendra, thank you for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
To start off with, would you mind telling me a little bit about your diagnosis?
Yeah, sure. So I was diagnosed with stage 2 invasive lobular breast cancer in October of last year. So that was right at the, well, in the pandemic, not at the very beginning, but just before the second wave. So still very worrying time. And actually, prior to that, I was trying to change my lifestyle in terms of eating better, taking more exercise. And then I got a letter in the post asking me to come and be a part of a trial to screen women who are under 50, and that was within the age range of 47 to 49, to see if it would be worthwhile for them to have screening done at that age. Now, I've got no family history of breast cancer, so I just thought, yeah, definitely. I'm a nurse. I want to participate in research, and this is for a good cause. So I went down and I had my screening done. It was in a supermarket car park. So it wasn't the greatest place. But so I went in, had my screening done, and just remember thinking, hopefully the door doesn't open whilst I've got my boobies out on the plate there. But anyway, had the screening done, didn't think anything of it. For the next couple of weeks, just went about my business, doing my job, not really thinking anything of it. And then I got a letter which was asking me to come back and have a few more tests. Now, initially, I was just like, okay, yeah, this is part of the trial, so that's no problem at all. But there was something that I don't know, just this feeling that I had, a little niggling feeling that actually, hang on a minute, why would I get this letter? So my husband has private insurance through his work. So he said, not a problem, let's just book an appointment. You see a breast care consultant. And if it's nothing, then that's great. And you can just carry on with the trial. And so we thought, okay, let's do that. So I got the letter on my husband's birthday. That was Friday. And then on the Tuesday, I had the appointment with the consultant. So I went in and a lovely consultant introduced me to his colleague, just a healthcare worker. So I took my history. Yeah. And as I said, no family history, generally fit and well, gave up smoking a long time ago. So I didn't really think that that was going to have any effect, really. And then he asked me to get on the examination couch so he could examine me. So as he was examining me, I noticed that he was concentrating more on my right breast. And I was a bit like, what's he doing that for? But didn't think anything of it. Then he continued, and then he got a pen out and he drew a circle around my right nipple. And I thought, okay, that's a bit odd. And then he said, okay, I'd like you to go off and have an ultrasound scan and a 3D mammogram, and maybe you might go on to have a biopsy. And he, at the time when he drew the circle, he didn't say to me that he'd felt a lump or anything like that. So I was none the wiser, really. So I went through to the other side, had my ultrasound scan, had a 3D mammogram as well. And then they took me straight into another room and they said, oh, we're going to do the biopsy. And I thought, okay, I thought that maybe that wouldn't happen. So I did ask, I said, well, I thought maybe you would wait for the results of the other two. And she said, oh, no, we'll just go ahead and do that now. So I had the biopsy done, which is quite a painful process, I have to say. And then She said to me, once it was finished, she said to me, okay, it takes about 45 minutes for us to get the preliminary results. So just have a seat. So luckily they had a hot chocolate machine and I had plenty of hot chocolate to take my mind off things whilst I waited. And then about 45 minutes later, I think it was probably an hour actually, the consultant came back in. So I had my fill of hot chocolate, couldn't have any more after that. So he took me through. And then I noticed that there was a different nurse in the room. So I sat down on the chair and he said, "This is my colleague. She's a breast care specialist nurse." And straight away, I knew that it was going to be bad news. Because I've been in this position as a nurse with my patient in the same position, you know, but it's the patient receiving that news. So I know what it's like when they say, "And this is a specialist nurse here with me." So to be honest, the only thing I heard was that I have breast cancer. And I didn't really hear anything else. I just felt the room go dark, felt quite ill. And the next thing I knew, I was on London Bridge platform. And it was like, you know, when you watch those movies and, you know, the person is just standing and then the world is just moving so fast around them. That's what it felt like for me. And I eventually managed to get my mobile out and call my husband, but I couldn't speak at first to him. Yeah, and then I just was crying, and then I said, "Oh, I've got breast cancer," and yeah, that was it. I went home and just absolutely sobbed my heart out, cried like I'd never cried before, because I said I just didn't know anything about breast cancer. For me, breast cancer is not something that happened to Black women, because my mum didn't have it. So how come I should have it? Why should I have it? And I was just really angry and frustrated and hurt and sad, because I didn't know. I just thought I was going to die. That's what I knew. I know that if you get told you have cancer, surely you're going to die. And it was really difficult. And in the next few days, it was just really difficult. I had to go maybe about 4 days after that, go and have an MRI scan. And I don't like MRI scans. I've had them before. I'm quite claustrophobic anyway. So I literally begged the consultant to give me something to help keep me calm whilst I have the MRI. And actually, this type of MRI, I had to lie face down. And so it was really, really hard. But what I did was I imagined that I was lying on a sandy beach and I could hear the waves and I can see the waves. And that just helped me to get through that whole kind of thing. 2 days later, I went back to see the consultant surgeon and he confirmed that I had some enhancements away from the initial lump, which was underneath my right nipple. So he said, "Right, we can't do a lumpectomy," because that was the original plan, to have a lumpectomy and have chemotherapy and radiotherapy. He said, you have to have a mastectomy. And then it went very quickly and he was just like, "Yeah, you can have a mastectomy and then you can have immediate reconstruction. And then you can also have some augmentation on your left breast as well." And I thought, yeah, we're going to do that. Yeah, because I need to look like a woman. So yeah, definitely we're going to do all of that. So agreed to all of that surgery. But actually, I went home and thought about it. And because I'm a nurse, I know that that was going to be a longer procedure. It would mean that I would be on the operating table for much longer. I would be in hospital for much longer. When you're in hospital for longer, it leads to you maybe coming up with infections, and in particular COVID infections. And I was just so scared. I didn't want any of that. So I remember calling him and saying, "No, I'm just going to have a simple mastectomy." And actually at this point, he put me back in touch with the breast care specialist nurse, and she provided me with lots of information from Breast Cancer Now. And that's where I came across someone like me, which I was looking at on the website. And I decided to contact someone like me, because it just allows you to talk with people who have been in similar positions or who are in similar positions to what you're going through. And I got to talk to three really lovely ladies. So one who had a mastectomy with no reconstruction, a lady who had a reconstruction immediately after, and a lady who had one 6 months later. So it gave me a broad range of what it might be like for me. And I found that so helpful. And it didn't influence my decision because I already had my decision, but it was nice to hear other women's stories. So I was diagnosed on the 5th of October and I had my surgery on the 29th of October. So it was a little bit of a roller coaster. Everything went very, very quickly. I listened to some of the other podcasts that you did, and a lot of those women went through chemotherapy, radiotherapy. I mean, I've been very lucky. It didn't spread to my lymph nodes at all. So I didn't have to have any lymph node clearance, and I've not had to have any chemotherapy, radiotherapy. I'm just on tamoxifen. The side effects of that have been really horrendous for me. It just plunges you into the menopause. And I think because I didn't know about my mum's menopause and what she went through and what age she was, I didn't really know what to expect. And literally, it's just hot sweat after hot sweat, night sweats, brain fog, joint pain, pretty much doom and gloom. So I've actually spoken with my oncologist and I've reduced my treatment. So I'm taking 20 milligrams of tamoxifen every other day. And I'm going to do that for 3 months and just see how I get on with the side effects. I've learned as well to take my tamoxifen around 5 or 6 o'clock, which means that most of the hot flushes come towards the end of the evening and when I'm sleeping. So then I get these horrendous night sweats, but it doesn't really affect me during the day. So it's just about making little minor changes so that you can continue with treatment. Because at some point I thought I'm not going to do this. I just can't bear this. But, you know, those kind of menopausal symptoms or the possibility of a recurrence of cancer. So it was a no-brainer, really.
Thank you for taking us through all that. Like you say, it really was a roller coaster. I think what became especially pertinent as you were going through that is you had absolutely no warning at all at the beginning, and everything was just quick succession of things happening and you not really having time to catch up with it. Especially as you didn't even detect those symptoms yourself. It was a random screening. And I'm so glad that you did actually go along to that.
Yeah.
And it just shows how important they are. But it was when you had that time to actually reflect and think, oh, is this the right thing to do? And, you know, being a nurse, you obviously had that knowledge to rely on, and someone like me. So that gave you pause for thought and then to actually process things a little bit. And while all this was going on, did you have people around you that you could discuss this with as well? I know obviously you had someone like me, but what about family members? Did you talk to them at all? And what were their reactions to what was going on?
Yeah, it was really difficult. I didn't really have anyone to talk to. I spoke to my husband about it, and he's very open and honest. And actually, we thought with our two boys, we were going to be really open and honest with them about it. So I remember the day we sat them down. We were all sitting at the dinner table. And so my eldest son, he has autism. So he's very, very literal. And so basically we told them, we said, you know, mummy's got breast cancer and she needs to have an operation. And at this moment, we don't really know what's going to happen after that. So my son, Ben, who has the autism, he literally just said, right, mum, I've got 4 questions for you. But to be honest, I only remember 2 of them. And the first one was, are you going to lose your hair? And the second one was, are you going to die? And I don't really remember the other two because I think once he asked me the question, are you going to die? I just, probably went into a state of shock and couldn't really take on anything else. Mm. With my other son, he's really very sensitive and actually didn't say very much, didn't have any questions to ask. But I noticed then, maybe a few days later, that he started being really, really horrible towards me, really being nasty, saying horrible things, really angry with me. And I couldn't really tell. And usually those things that I would do to comfort him when he was upset about just wasn't working. He was awful. Actually, he was really awful. I thought, oh my God, this cannot be my child. But he was really, really bad. And with my daughter, I told her straight away because I thought she needs to know this. I didn't have that growing up in terms of being told about any health problems or any physical health, mental health, anything really, emotional, anything like that, even down to simple conversations about periods and sex and things like that. That never happened for me. And I know that that was something that I wanted to change with my children. So immediately when I knew about my diagnosis, I told my daughter because I thought it would be important for her to know because she needs to know that there is a history of breast cancer in the family. So, and then, you know, with colleagues, with work colleagues, I told them, but it was really difficult. I could see that they didn't really know how to talk to me anymore. It was strange. They just, because generally I'm my personality type is a connector. So I'm always like really around people. I love being around people and making, you know, making people feel good and happy. And I like to be happy and all of that kind of stuff. So when I told my colleagues about my diagnosis, and then I could almost see them physically backing away from me, like, oh my God, what do we say to her? She's got cancer. Oh, we can't do that. One particular colleague who wanted to know everything, just constantly, all of the time. And that was overwhelming and just too much. So I just thought, no, I don't want that either. So yeah, I was a bit in a bit of a rock and a hard place. But actually, I was really lucky with the breast care specialist nurse that I had, because she put me in touch with Breast Cancer Now. And I was on the website and looking at all of the resources and the leaflets that she gave me. I had someone like me. And then it may well have been you, Em, introduced me to the Becca app. That really helped to support me because I really wasn't getting the support I think that I needed. When I told my mum, you know, I had breast cancer, she didn't even really acknowledge it. And then when I told her I needed to go for another MRI, and she was just like, well, maybe that one will show that it's not there. And I just thought, Mum, it is there. Yeah. It is there. I have cancer. And she was like, oh, don't say that. Don't say that. Don't say that word. Don't use that word. And I just, at this point, I thought, I can't deal with this. I've got breast cancer, and I need people to be strong about that because I need to be strong. So yeah, it was difficult, those conversations that I had.
That sounds, yeah, like you say, difficult. What the word is there for it? It's just to have so many varied reactions as well from your immediate family and young children, especially. It's so unpredictable how they might react, and we can see that in the difference between your two boys. And I'm sorry you had that to deal with, you know, on top of all the existing stress that you already had. And I think the difference in how your colleagues reacted, some of them completely backing off and some of them being overwhelming, just shows that we don't really know how to talk about breast cancer. And I think, like you said, particularly your mother, and as you mentioned before, I think you said that cancer or breast cancer is just a lot of Black women think that it's not a disease that's going to affect them. And do you mind speaking a bit more on that? Do you think that might be sort of why your mum might have had this reaction, just thinking like, well, you know, we're Black women are not susceptible to this, so this must be wrong?
Yeah, absolutely. I think probably because my mum never had that kind of relationship with my grandmother, with her mother. So, you know, my mum is from Barbados, and she was there up until the age of 18 when she came over, kind of the Windrush generation. And so she didn't have her mother with her for a lot of her life anyway, although my grandmother lived into her 80s. And I think for my mum, it was just never subjects that you would talk about. You know, when you go to register at the GP and they talk about family history, I said, oh, I don't know. Mm. I don't know any of my family history. And I remember then asking my dad, who's also from Barbados, and then I found out a bit of health history on his side of the family. But with my mum, nothing. I didn't know anything. I didn't know when my mum went through her menopause, anything like that. She just wasn't able to talk about those things. So that's why I think she found it really difficult to talk to me about my diagnosis. She was there for me, but not in the way that I think she would like to have been, because it was just so taboo for her. And do you know what? Still to this day, she calls it the big C. And it's like, Mum, please, it's cancer. That's what it is. We have to call it out, you know. And I think she just finds it really difficult to speak about. You're right. It is something that, as a Black woman, you just don't think that that affects Black women. I think it's when you, I know that the resources that I had before, prior to getting the stuff from Breast Cancer Now, it was of white women and white women in their 50s and 60s. That's what I saw. So for me, looking at that, I couldn't relate to that, you know? And I think that's the same for my mum as well. And to be honest, she may well have had friends who had breast cancer, but I don't know anything about that. Because she's never spoken about it. And I suppose because she's not had breast cancer, you know, my mum was having mammograms at the time when she was eligible. And so nothing ever showed. So it was just something that didn't affect us. So there was no need to talk about that. And even if it was something that did affect us, we wouldn't talk about that anyway.
You said earlier it was anything that was vaguely medical, so it's just even periods weren't discussed. It's just, I think you used the word taboo as well. And it's so dangerous when we consider these very essential health things as taboo. This shouldn't be a taboo subject.
Absolutely.
Yeah, you should just be able to have these open conversations, because there's nothing wrong with what you're talking about. It's just taking precautions.
Yes.
And I wonder if through what you experienced, if you kind of had any ideas, were there any things that you saw, oh, this organization is doing this particularly well, or this person talks about this particularly well in a way that was more involving? Because I understand that a lot of what we see is very homogenous and is very white women are represented, older white women are represented. What kind of things did you see, or were there any things that you saw that made you think, oh, actually, I should have been aware of this. This is like appealing to me.
Yeah, I think if you look at it in the general aspect of things, that there isn't anything that really represents kind of who I am and what I'm about and my culture and things like that. I only really became aware of anything to do with breast cancer because of my diagnosis and because of being put in touch with the Breast Cancer Now website. Otherwise, I wouldn't have known anything at all. And I think what I like about Breast Cancer Now is that you see a whole range of women, and you see men as well, you know, because I think that's another thing that people don't realize, that this affects men as well. And I think that's what's really good about Breast Cancer Now, is that it's diverse and it's inclusive. And so it doesn't make you feel like that you shouldn't be looking at that kind of stuff because this is not about you. It's very inclusive. And I think I really found that really helpful. I think it's so important to have champions of things that have been through it. So people with lived experience, you know, people who look like you, who are from the same culture as you, who have been through what you are going through. If you can see that, then I think that makes you much more aware, and it makes you much more inclined to engage in things and to talk about things that normally, you know, would be taboo, and there would be this huge stigma around talking about things like that.
I believe that you said at some point that you wanted to use your experience to then speak to other people who, like yourself, might not have had the opportunity to have these conversations before. Is that correct?
Yeah, absolutely. 'Cause for me, when I was going through this, I didn't see anyone really that looked like me until I got in touch with Breast Cancer Now. And that was really important, 'cause you want to have a sense of belonging. Although you have this diagnosis and at times you think, I'm the only person going through this, you know that you're not, and there are other people, but you want people that you can relate to. So since I've had my diagnosis and I'm in my treatment stage now, and I've been really in touch with Breast Cancer Now and all of the stuff, like Someone Like Me, I thought I want to be involved in that. Hence why I'm doing this podcast, so that, you know, I can say as a Black woman that it's really important that you look after your health and you check your breasts, and you know, if there's anything wrong, just to talk about it, check out Breast Cancer Now website, or but also just check out any information. There's lots of information out there. And actually, if you Google or if you go on Instagram and things like that, you will see a lot of things. On the Becca app, there are so many different sections to that can relate to lots of different women and men, and you will find something that relates to you as well. And I think that's really important. So I'm involved in a few other bits and pieces within the Breast Cancer Now organization, because I really want to champion the fact that it's not taboo to talk about your health, and it's not taboo to talk about your breasts, and it's not taboo to get them checked. And there's lots of information out there. I think that's just so important. And I hope to do more in the future. I just think at the moment with my treatment and then with my work, it's trying to find time to squeeze that in. But definitely I want to do more to raise awareness, particularly in my communities. So I've been doing little kind of Zoom chats with women, and actually seeing how many women there are out there and who have been just like, oh my gosh, I'm so glad that we've been able to talk to you, you know, because, you know, you can't talk to family and it's really difficult to talk to family, or, you know, people, that same thing of people start to back away. Oh God, there's that woman with breast cancer. What do we say to her, kind of thing? Even through my work, which is a huge organization, I'm part of our Black Asian minority ethnic network, and so I've been given webinars through there, and actually there are a lot of women in similar positions to me who again are just like, this is a really good thing, how can we get involved in this, we want to spread that word. You want to inspire other people and to follow your cause, almost, like things like that. And I think that's really important. That's how you get the message out, because the more information you're armed with, the better you will be, and it's just about raising awareness. The best piece of advice that I was given was from one of the breast care specialist nurses, and she said to me, stop asking the question why, because you will never get that answer. You will never get the answer that you want, because I was often just, why has this happened to me? I don't understand why. What did I do? All of this kind of stuff. And she said, nobody will be able to answer that for you. What you need to think about is, what's the next step? What is the next step on this journey that you are on at the moment? So that's the best piece of advice that was given to me. And I actually I stole it. And I say it now to everyone that I meet, that, you know, particularly if you're so wrapped up about something and you just don't understand why, it's no point, because you will just cause yourself stress and anxiety, and that will bring on all sorts of other things. So just, what is the next step in your journey? Because this is a journey that we're on.
Yeah, brilliant. Thank you. And I think earlier on you described yourself as a connector, and that really shone through in what you've just been saying in all these different aspects where you're connecting people where you can, through work, through church groups, through friendship groups, and even social media as well. Like you said, it's so much easier now to share a message and just put it out there if you're not quite comfortable having those very intimate conversations with people, because whether we like it or not, it might still be taboo to talk about certain body parts or certain illnesses. But you can just put it out there and say, okay, right, we don't have to have this face-to-face conversation, but you might want to check your breasts. You might want to be aware of these services that are out there. And I think that's fantastic that you're doing that. And I wondered then, over the course of your treatment, over the course of you kind of navigating these difficult conversations, have you seen any change in how your family now speak about it with you? Are they sort of a bit more adjusted to the idea of cancer is something that happens, it's happening to you, and you need support with that?
Yeah, I think so. With my two boys, for example, they're a lot better. They've coped with it. They see that I've come through, I've had my surgery, I'm on treatment now. And actually we have a little bit of a joke because I've had a mastectomy and I've stayed just with one breast. I do have a little prosthesis that I have. And so when the boys do anything naughty, I say, listen now, I'll get my prosthesis out and I'll put it in your face. we have a little bit of a laugh and a joke about things. So that's really good because I think that helps to keep me going. I think it helps them as well. Mm. With my mum, things are a lot better, but still it's very much the same. We don't really talk about what's going on for me. So she'll ask me how are you doing? And I'll say, okay, I'm okay, mum. And then I'll start to talk a little bit about my treatment. And then she'll just go off onto a different subject. I think it's still really difficult for her. And I think she hasn't accepted that I've had breast cancer and I've had surgery for that and I'm on treatment. It's really difficult. But you know, my mum is she's 80 now, and I think that probably this is as good as it's going to get. But my feeling is that I'm determined to continue to talk about it with her. Mm. I will call it cancer because that's what it was that I had. And with my boys and with my daughter, I'm so open about my health and all of the things that are going on with me, and for them, and to telling them that it's really important that they talk about the things that they do. With regards to my colleagues, it's almost forgotten that I had breast cancer because I've been back at work. I was back at work, I think, 3 or 4 months after my surgery. And as soon as I was back, it was almost forgotten that I had cancer. So nothing. Yeah, It's sad in a little bit of a way because there are times when I want to talk about things, but yeah, I think they've kind of forgotten that happened, and we're just kind of moving on. We're doing our work. So yeah, but I'm happy about how my boys have taken it on board, and we have a laugh and a joke, and with my husband as well. He's always been so supportive, and he's always been very open. He will talk about it regardless of whether you want to or not. But it's good. It's all good. Yeah,
I'm glad to hear that you're in a better place than you were at the start of all this. That's really wonderful to hear. To find out more about Kendra's story, you can follow her on social media. You can find her on Twitter at Schnella Kendra and on Instagram at Schnecky1. And both of those will be in our show notes for today. Thank you so much for speaking with me, Kendra.
Lovely. Thank you, Em, for having me. I've really enjoyed it. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Breast Cancer Now podcast. Make sure to subscribe to our channel on your preferred podcast service to hear our next episode. If you have any questions or concerns from listening today, you can find information on our research, services, and campaigning on our website at breastcancernow.org.